Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. I'm here with Scott. How are you doing today?
I am doing fine. I see my wife is in the chat room, so that means she is not going into labor, so that is good news for me.
For right now.
For now. I don't need to leave, so I mean, I'm still here.
Oh, that's good. That's good. What do we have up to? Do you have anything special to announce today, or what's going on?
Well, we have a new giveaway coming up for next week where we're giving away strings from GHS Strings, both electric and acoustic, and then a custom-made keychain from their artist that they're bringing in, Nick Perry. He's got a store down in Melrose here in Los Angeles, and he makes these little custom leather keychains. So we'll be giving away that next week. I should say, actually, you'll probably be giving those away. I probably will not be here
yes.
next week. But then coming up after that, we do have an Audio-Technica System 10 wireless that we'll be giving away coming up. And I just posted up on my YouTube channel a new demo from the LA Talk, the LA Amp Show. There we go. Too many LAs. LA Amp Show, and this one is the Turok sensor, 35-watt head.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a great sound.
Yeah, so I've got more coming up. There'll be more from 65 Amps, who was on the show. We've got BC Audio, Sweetwood, and GMP Guitars. So, and some of those are featuring Jeff himself.
Okay, well, without further ado, I want to get into the show because we have a great guest here. I'm really excited to have him here. Our guest tonight is Grant Geisman. He's famous for doing Feel So Good with Chuck Mangione. He was the guitarist on that, but he's much more than that. What's interesting, we met over at the LA Amp Show, and we were talking about tone. And I forgot that as a session player, you know, a lot of the people that we have on the show, we focus on one sound. They have a distinctive sound. And, you know, I mentioned that the show was about tone, and he said, well, I don't want to be categorized in one tone. I do much more than that. And so I took a listen to it. He gave me a copy of his album, which, by the way, is called Bop, Bang, and Boom, and which we're going to play some cuts for. And as a session player, I forgot that, you know, that gig, you have to have a lot of different sounds and different tones. And Grant is one of those people that best exemplifies that, as you'll see with some of the clips they're going to play, because he's fluent in all different styles of music, and he has it's hard to classify his tone because he has so many different tones. And we're going to get in a little bit about that, whether it's electric or acoustic. And it's great to have you on the show, Grant.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice to be here.
I know Scott had a question about your jazz sound, so I'm going to start off real quick. I'm going to play this clip. It's called Boom, and it has let everybody judge for themselves how great this guitar sounds. Here's Boom. Thank you. great sound. Now, you're using a ES-335 on that.
I am. It's I think it's like the 92 reissue of the 59 dot neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the blonde-looking one. And I remember on that track, in fact, usually what we do, usually I approach things from a jazz point of view
mm-hmm.
and go from there. So, you know, I want to have literally no distortion at all on my amp on a tune like that.
Mm-hmm.
So super clean sound. So what we did is we take a DI coming straight off the guitar, and then from that also go into the amp, which on that stuff, I still keep going back for a jazz sound to this Yamaha G100 from the mm-hmm. early 80s, whatever, you know. Obviously you can't use the distortion channel on that. It sounds horrible. But just the straight in, clean channel, killer sound. And that's what that is. It's a combination of the DI and the G100, you know, mic'd.
Oh, okay.
And then these albums are done, this is a part of a trilogy, sort of a jazz trilogy that I've done on my own label. So it's this album and the previous album called Cool Man Cool,
mm-hmm.
and the one before that was called Say That. And it's very much of a jazz approach. It's a live band playing live in the studio. I didn't overdub my solos. That's what I played on the take and like that. So I didn't, you know, get a track and then take it home and work out my solo. No, this is a band playing live, including me.
Yeah, you can hear, I mean, the band is tight.
I mean,
and
we rehearsed.
Some of those
I know. I didn't just spring it on everybody. But
some
you know.
Of the changes and stuff, I was like, how could he do this with a click track? There's just no way, especially...
It is with a click.
Yeah.
You did click? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, some of the stuff, the changes and the time signature, there's... I mean, it's just really tight. I don't know how to
describe. I'll testify, most of that went down live off of the floor. Everything, we might have replaced like one note of the bass, but those are live.
This is my engineer friend, Steve Shepard, who's recorded my last quite a few albums. And we also, I use Steve on my TV stuff,
mm-hmm.
my writing stuff. So
Did you believe him. Anything particular on miking that amp that he was using or any of his?
You know, I usually use a 57 and a Royer microphone, and then we blend to tape, and that with the DI and, you know, a little compression. But, you know, that's most of this stuff, that's how it sounded in the room to me. You know, the guys play great. The instruments all sound really good.
You didn't do much to isolate them. You basically set them up so that it would be a good room sound.
We were
in
a room where we had isolation. The drums were in a booth. Grant was in a room, the saxophone was in a room, the piano and the bass and the percussion were out in the big room, so that we had a little bleed on that. But,
Yeah, it's a jazz approach. You want to capture the liveness, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think that there's something to be said about that. It's
and you gotta
just
have
the feel alone was
and, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said. And, you know, truthfully, if you're making these kinds of records, if you can't do it that way, then you shouldn't be making records like this. You know,
mm-hmm.
You shouldn't call these jazz records if you can't get out there. I mean, Miles Davis didn't overdub all his stuff, or, you know. So
I don't know if I haven't been following all the new stuff that's been happening in jazz, but I mean, most of them seem to be live performances. I mean,
some are, some aren't. You know.
Now, do you?
Well, I mean, if it's real jazz, if it's like smooth jazz or something like that, you know, those are all built.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
But now, let me ask you this on just as a sideline, going to the stuff that you write for television.
Mm-hmm.
Do you try to grab that as a live section, and then if you have to overdub after, do you try to get as much as possible?
Well, I mean, for the most part, the shows I do are kind of like, it's me and my writing partner, Dennis C. Brown, so it's kind of like one- and two-man band kind of stuff. Like today, we worked all day on the show Mike and Molly that I co-write for. And it's just, you know, Steve and I just work together, and I did all the acoustic guitar stuff and whatever, and, you know, it's like I essentially played everything.
Oh, okay.
But having said that, like last season on Two and a Half Men, we got to stretch our wings a bit, and we did the music for a 3-minute, 15-second, full Broadway-style production number that they shot on the New York back street at Warner Brothers with 50 dancers. And so, you know, that was a full big rhythm section and brass section and 16 singers and, you know.
So did you write those lyrics for that song?
They gave us the lyrics, and then they said, if you need to hone them in or add words or whatever, you know, go ahead. So we did that, and then, yeah, we wrote the music to it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, did this big arrangement, and that was really fun.
Now, working in the constraints of, you know, the deadlines for television, which are grueling at best, what do you think? Is it harder to overdub and spend the time layering the tracks, or is it easier? Because I know some people preferred, you know, bringing in a section just to get it, you know, get it once. I mean, and both of you guys chime in what you think. Is it, do you find that it's any advantage, or do you, you've been able to keep it, you've been able to move pretty fast either way, whether you're overdubbing or using a live section?
Well, I'll let Steve answer that, because he's the one that has to sit there and suffer through me adding
rough.
One thing.
It's rough. No, Grant can actually play. So we set it up, and Grant plays the guitar, and he says, okay, give me another track, and he plays another guitar, and then I'm going to do the dobro, and then we move to the bass, and, you know, we move through, the things go fast. So it's not a lot of obsessing or worrying about it, because he can play.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, so when you do a show like a Mike and Molly or a Two and a Half Men, what information are you providing? I mean, obviously for the Broadway piece, you were obviously providing
bit. Yeah, we had a couple weeks had, you know, lead time on that. But
if you're just doing like a regular episode, what are they providing you and saying, hey, we just need this style of music? Just make something up?
No, they give us the video, and we've done it long enough where we know where the transitions are and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so we just watch the picture and, oh, this cue needs to be this long and it needs to go from there to there. And, you know, sometimes they'll give us some kind of direction, you know, like they want it to be whatever, and, you know. But, we're just putting music to picture.
So you don't have a spotting session, you know now.
Sometimes we do, but for the most part, not, unless it's some really special thing. Like we know, you know.
You know it's, yeah. You know what's happening there.
Well, before you play the next clip, let me ask, for those that maybe are either just getting into jazz or learning or just want to know how to create that tone, I mean, how would you tell, what's the secrets to kind of creating the jazz tone on a guitar? What are your settings that you would put?
I mean, for that kind of tone that you just heard, it's kind of a rounder sound, you know, it doesn't have, we do take the DI so it has a little point on it, but the roundness I want from the amp is just a kind of a pure, you know, kind of slightly mid-rangey, slightly big-sounding kind of tone.
Okay, because I know that your sound's clean. I know some guys will turn the amp up and back off on the guitar a little bit so they get a little less high frequency, and then if they push it, especially if they're playing like with the thumb or something, it'll just get a little bit of breakup, so it gets a little boring.
In my case, I like to play a lot of, you know, sometimes multi notes at the same time or chords in the middle of my solo. For the most part, that doesn't sound very good if your amp is breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to go for an absolutely clean tone mm-hmm. as my basic tone. And then if I am using distortion, I'll often get that off a pedal.
Now let me pull your memory a little bit on Feel So Good. What did you use?
It was my Gibson L5, which I think was made in a 67. I got it in 67. So I think pretty sure that's, maybe I got it the early part of 68. Anyway, it's the guitar I've had all that time. And when we did Feel So Good, that particular album was overdubbed. Like, you know, we did the rhythm section stuff, and then I went back and did the solo. Although that particular solo was what I played on a demo that we had done, you know, like just kind of trying stuff out. And we all fell in love with what we had played on these demos, so I just relearned my solo and fixed up a few things.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
So that solo is actually a combination of the improvisation that was on the demo and sort of my later, you know, composition in a way, like fixing up what I didn't like and mm-hmm. making it better. But when I went to do the solo, I was sitting in the control room. We just went through a DI, and I had an MXR Phase 90 on the, you know, like a phaser.
One of the originals it must have been.
Yeah, it had to be, right? And when did those come out? 70s, I don't know, mid-70s or something?
Probably similar to the model that Eddie Van
Halen
made famous.
Yeah, no, but your sound on that just was just the clarity of the tone.
And a lot of that goes to our friend Mick Gazowski, who recorded and engineered that project. And Mick has played, engineered on so many hits. You can't. It's easier to count the hits he didn't
mm-hmm.
engineer.
Yeah, he's a legend.
But
Mick is amazing.
But most recently, he recorded and mixed all the Daft Punk stuff on that their new album. What's that called? Anyway, it's the big hit.
Now,
one.
From back then, from Chuck, your approach with guitars, amps, pretty much the same, or have things changed?
No,
for
pretty
you?
Pretty much the same. Yeah.
Okay.
I always, again, I approach things from a jazz point of view, basically, and then go from there. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, like when I was coming up, I was kind of schizophrenic because I'd have my rock bands on the weekends, mm-hmm. and then in school or out in the garage even, I'd organize these little jazz combos. So I literally kind of like going both ways at once.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to play another clip. This one is a little different because you're using a Jerry Jones electric sitar, which I thought was kind of an interesting way of using it. And this is called Go to the Window. And here it is. Now, that just doesn't sound to me like a click track. There's some great breaks in there, but
the trick is having guys that can play with a click and make it feel great.
That's the first and only take of that song, I believe.
That's right. Steve Shepard is right. That's correct.
Okay. And that sitar was direct?
Yeah.
You didn't use any, it was just strictly?
Not through an amp, no. It was direct. And I remember I used this, I don't know the model number, but it's this old kind of half rack space Zoom, mm-hmm. like the original Zoom that came out.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I had set up just a chorus and a little delay. And so basically it was just going direct, but through that Zoom.
Yeah, no, it's real clean. And you're when you're doing all those fast riffs in there, it's clear. I can hear every note. It's just crystal clear.
Thank you. And I have to point out to the listeners that Jeff is sort of cutting into the guitar solos on these things. Like these are full songs with with melodies and they all build, but it's kind of nice to jump in the middle of something. It's like, okay, burning, just boom, there we go.
The songs are very. It was a little tricky trying to get clips because the songs the way he plays, there's a lot of development. So he'll do a lead and it develops and it goes and it could be 2 minutes and it's killer and it was really. There's one clip that we'll play at the end that I just couldn't cut it. It was too good. So, but I mean, yes, I'm taking them a little bit out of context because I'm trying to grab something to show, something. But
it's pretty fun though. I like it. I'm enjoying it.
It was kind of interesting trying to pull clips out that made sense.
So on that sitar, is that tuned just like a guitar, but it has sympathetic strings on top of it?
Yeah, I mean, technically it does have these sympathetic strings, but I've never noticed them actually doing anything. You know, I mean, I guess they sort of vibrate, but what the sound of it is really. You know, it's the Jerry Jones reissue of the old Dan Electro electric sitar from mm-hmm. the 60s. And the way that they got that sound is the strings, the bridge is actually kind of this metal plate that's maybe like an inch wide or something. Yeah, he's got a picture of it here on the website.
The way the bridge is, it
like the
vibrates.
Bridge is a metal flat piece of, you know. There's no saddles or anything. That's what
makes
it
sound. You've never tuned the sympathetic strings, or is there a way you're supposed to tune those?
I mean, they're chromatic. If you can go vring, it's just a chromatic scale. But I guess maybe they do something on some subliminal level, but
right.
You couldn't prove it by me.
No, it's an interesting sound. Have you used that a lot in sessions? Do they call it for? Is that?
Now
I mean, I know
then,
it's popular now.
I mean, I've used it over the years now and then, and I think that. You know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I used it on another album project of mine, mm-hmm. based a tune around it. And I've always loved it. The thing is, that song title, Go to the Window, I mean, I'm a huge Beatles fan, always have been. So in the movie Help, there's a scene where, you know, they're trying to, you know, paint Ringo red so they can sacrifice him. Mm-hmm. And so they call up and you know, the religious fanatics keep saying, go to the window. Because they're trying to get him at the window so they can kill him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so go, and then there's this strange music playing, whatever. And so that's what Go to the Window. That's where the title came from.
Yeah. No, I remember in Help, there's a lot of, I think it's actually sitar.
A lot of sitar stuff.
It's
yeah,
real sitar
is.
On that one. But yeah, no, that I when you I forgot about that was in the liner notes in your album, that but I remember that scene. That was pretty funny. Now I'm going to take it totally in a different direction. And this one hits close to home because I remember when I was in school, at that time there was only a classical guitar department. This is your tribute to Ron Purcell. the name of this track is called Guitarism, and it's two guitars. You're using a 72 Hernandez Grade 1A classical and a 75 Hernandez Grand Concert. So mm-hmm. let me just play the clip, and then we can talk a little bit about
Great.
It. Here's Guitarism. Piece.
Thanks.
What amazes me is the articulation. I mean, it's just your clarity of notes when you're playing, and then also too the counterpoint or the between the, or the interplay between the two guitars is really interesting. Let's ask the engineer about this one. How many takes?
Not very many takes. We might have.
It sounded like now.
No, it's all played down.
Did you click that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, you know, I've done so many sessions to a click that it just sounds, it feels right to me, you know.
I can't tell. And I mean, it's because there's just little nuances that you're doing between the, especially between the guitars. It sounds.
I mean,
like
a piece like that would have been, truthfully, would have been hard to record without a click, because the things trying to get everything to line up, you know, and then it would be faster at the beginning or faster at the end, and you know, whatever.
Yeah, to play a duet with yourself, you have to have some.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds like two guys are playing right there.
And so, as it turns out, this is the one piece that is an overdub piece. So I had to do the, whatever, let's call it guitar one. I laid that down first. And then I, you know, had to realize that I was going to play a solo. So I, you know, played the chords knowing that I'd add a solo later, you know, and all of that. So then I had to go back and overdub the second guitar part. And there's also another part in the middle that's kind of like this flamenco thing where they, you know, do the clapping.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all, that's hand claps, that's me, and a little guitar percussion.
Yeah, I have to recommend this album to everybody because there's so much more. I'm only covering just little snippets of it. There's just way more to this album than what we hope to cover tonight.
But before we go too far, Jeff, I want to just say, you mentioned Dr. Ron Purcell, and he was my classical guitar teacher at Cal State Northridge. I grew up in San Jose, and I came down here basically because I knew this is where the whole music scene was that I wanted to try to see if I could become a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I knew Cal State Northridge wasn't that far from the Hollywood scene, so it's like, that's where I'm going. So I moved down here. And when I came down, I had never really played any classical guitar. I didn't have a clue, the first clue about what it is. So, there, you know, at Northridge at that time, you had to be a classical guitar major if you were going to major in guitar. You could play in the jazz band and stuff like that, but you could not, like, you know, you couldn't be a jazz guy and have a major at Cal State Northridge. So they had an audition to see if you're good enough to get into the guitar department, and there was like four or five judges sitting there, and I walked in with my Gibson L5, you know, and it's, you know,
imagine.
Open up my case, and it's like immediately hostile from these guys. And like one of them literally said, "What are you going to do with that?" You know, and I go, "Well, you know, I've never played classical guitar. I just said, yeah, I told them, you know, I go, but I can play some stuff for you and whatever." And so I played some kind of chord melody solo, and still they were very hostile. You know, they're just going, you know, get out, you know. But Ron Purcell, he goes, okay, he sort of waved them all off. He goes, no, we're fine here. You just have to, you know, work on your right hand classical technique, but we, no problem. You know, there's nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah.
You know, and Ron is just a lovely guy, and he passed away, a couple of years ago. So I wanted to write a piece in tribute to him. So yeah. That's what that is.
Well, let me ask you, when you guys recorded that, did you record his guitars stereo? Or
yeah, both guitars were recorded in stereo.
But were you using two mics to record each classical?
Yeah, it had an 87 and a 414.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And reversed them, and that made the left and right, and it's a little different. But my ears aren't the same anyway, so... I don't insist on matched mics.
So no. when you do that, when you record his guitar, where do you stick them in the position of the guitar?
You know, you don't want to record too closely. Usually where the neck joins the body is a central place to cluster them around. And, you know, microphones are more like basketballs than laser beams.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have them in the right spot, but... they're going to pick up an area about the size of a basketball. So, you know, to get too meticulous about aiming them at one particular molecule on the guitar is just ridiculous because...
And it also, you know, as a player, I don't want to feel like I, you know, if I move from the axis an inch or two, it's going to ruin everything. I really just have to be aware that the mics are there, but then forget they're there and just play. So I don't want to be conscious if I go off... an inch, it's not going to sound right, you know, so...
Well, that's true. When you pull the mics back a little bit, you hear the guitar more opposed to, you know, the box is resonating. You're getting a little bit of that as opposed to, you know, I understand that a lot of times in a rock gig where there's a lot of other stuff going on, they might mic closer to the strings to get it to cut through. But what you're playing, the type of music that you're playing, the room is important. And you get a nice room sound out of that. But I just want to mention, too, that what Grant was talking about in school, in those days, classical guitar was the only major there. And electric guitar wasn't, even though it was being used in television and even, you know, even at that time, it wasn't recognized. And I remember at school when I was there, we were talking about this before the show, that Lee Ritenour was in school with me, and he had to hide the fact that he was a session player. If he was caught, they would have thrown him out.
Well, I'll probably get killed by the classical police here, but I think Grant might have played that with a pick.
I did. It was a combination.
God forbid.
Well, it's a combination of pick and figure. Because I was always able, like I did my, you know, senior recital and all that, and I was able to get a really nice classical tone. What I never could get is the speed. Using only my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So then I developed this, you know, I didn't develop it, but I started, you know, using a combination of pick and fingers at the same time.
So you tend to do that when you do sessions, you have the pick and you use the fingers?
Unless it really needs to be all fingers. But like I say, if it's got to be, you know, fast, then I'm going to the pick. That's, you know, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it sounded like all fingers.
You'd
He was doing some, but it's interesting that your fingers and the pick blend well. Usually you can hear the difference from fingers to a pick.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that you're able to
I might have played the body of the piece all with fingers, though, and then when it was time to do my solo, I have this thing where I hide the pick between my, you know, index and middle finger, and it'll stay there, and I can play with fingers, and then when I need to get the pick, I just get it and go to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I remember Lee, too. Same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have to, when it came down to doing the fast
It's very
fast
hard
stuff,
to play fast.
Give me that pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. That's a beautiful piece. I mean, I want to play another one where you're playing the classical guitar. This is called Un Poco Español. And, again, it's a little different sound, but it's basically, it's just beautiful. We'll talk about the engineering of this, too. Here we go. Now, that's the combination of the pick and the fingers. And it's still, it's just amazing how you get them to sound consistent. I mean, that's not easy. At least for me, when I play with a pick and then I go to fingers, it's like night and day. I never could get that. That's amazing. And your articulation, just all those little, it's just so clear.
Thanks. And again, Jeff is starting at like, that's the beginning of my improvised solo where he started. And, you know, that was all played live with the band. No, you know, I didn't overdub it or whatever. So that's what I sound like. There it is.
And that was the 414 and the, what were you using on that?
Isn't that other, your nylons, that's not.
That's the Hernandez.
No, that's the Hernandez. That was a, okay. Yeah.
But using the same as you were using guitarism?
Yeah. Probably the 87, the 414.
Yeah. I mean, it's just really clear. And, I mean, you're doing some pretty fast licks in there and a couple of slide downs, and it's just crystal clear.
Are you using, like, a thinner pick, or are you using
heavy pick is the secret. That's the way it blends between the pick sound and the fingers, because the heavier pick has a thicker sound, the way the fingernail and the, you know, the flesh of your fingers have a heavier sound, and so that's.
And on your classicals, are you using extra forte or normal, or what tension string?
I use usually either silver or gold. Usually silver tension, Aranwez. Yeah.
But it's normal tension or real. Some of the hardcore classical guys I remember in school, they used extra forte so they could really hit it. You know, they would attack.
I think this guitar. They said not to use this. I think they were afraid the whole thing might collapse on itself. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Now, do you consider yourself using a light touch, or you dig into the guitar? It's because to play that kind of, I would think that you would be a lighter touch to play as clear as you play.
You can do both.
Either both classical or your.
I guess
electric.
I can do both. I don't know. That's a hard question because I don't have anything to compare it to, since I've never been another player.
I remember on one of the records looking over, and you were playing the nylon string guitar, and the strings were just, they were vibrating at least like half an inch. The strings were just like.
So I must
like
have been. So I guess
like
I do both. I hit it. I can hit it hard. Or
now on your electric guitars, what gauge do you use?
I use Ernie Ball's. Let's see. I think they're called, hybrid slinkies, the orange pack. And I'll tell you, years ago, like on Feel So Good, all those years with Chuck Mangione when I was playing my L5, I used a ridiculously, most jazz players would go, oh, yeah, that's normal. But it was a 12 on top down to a 56 on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still even doing some bending on those strings. And I don't have the slightest idea how I did that, you know. I just
I probably didn't
know any better. But, you know, then as years went on, I went to lighter strings because I just didn't want to have to fight it that hard. So.
But you didn't find that going to the slinky, it changed the tone that much?
I can still get a nice jazz tone. I probably have to lighten my touch up a little bit.
Okay. So because that's one of the reasons most of the guys that I know that play the jazz, they use the heavier strings. It sounds different. They don't like the thinner sound of the lighter gauge strings. But.
So somehow
I'm not hearing it thin when you play it.
Somehow I get away with it.
Well, again, it goes to the point that it's in your hands. I mean, 99% of your sound is in your hands.
I agree.
Even though we promote guitars and
expensive amps and effects.
That's true, but it is in your hands, that's for sure.
Good old Billy Gibbons, you know, plays sevens. I don't think anyone would say his tone is.
I don't know how
thin.
He can play sevens. That's pretty amazing.
And he's famous for using really thick picks with sevens, and he never breaks a string. So.
Okay, now let's go in another direction. So, I mean, this just shows you how many different styles, techniques, sounds that are on this album. It's pretty amazing. We're gonna get into a song I'm gonna play in a little while later. It was a jam between. You, Albert Lee, and Larry Carlton. But this clip I'm going to play is before the... Again, I'm pulling all this stuff out of context. This is a little clip that you're playing just before you have the... You guys trade off solos. And
this is a tune called Texas Shuffle, and it's... I wrote the tune, and the melody is harmonized in for three guitars, three-part harmony the whole way through. And then each of us takes, like, a full... length solo of our own. So it's me and then Albert and then Larry. And then as the tune goes on, we we trade off, like we trade fours.
Right. So I'm going to play the slide part now, and then later the full trade-off where you guys all go is like about 2.5 minutes. So I took the end one where you guys go real fast so you can kind of get an idea of what everybody's playing. But I want to talk about the slide first because it's just another facet of your skill, and it's a totally different sound from what we've been playing this evening right now. So I want to bring that up, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the equipment. Here we go, Texas. This is from the Texas Shuffle. Now, that was which guitar? Was that the Strat or the...
That was probably my Valley Arts Strat.
Okay, because it mentioned that you were using a Paul Reed Smith.
That's on this. Okay, so there's I sort of lied. There's two tunes on the record that are more like overdub kind of thing. One is the guitarism track, and then this one, which we did with the band just as a rhythm track, because I knew I'd never get Larry, who now lives in Nashville, and Albert Lee, who's in and out of town. I knew I'd never get all those three people in the room at the same time. So we sort of recorded a basic track, and then I put the melodies on that Larry and Albert replaced their parts, and then I overdubbed my slide solo on this.
So the slide is a Strat. Now, what amp were you using? Is that a natural distortion amp?
I think what I recall is I probably used my, like a Blues Junior, and I used this Boss OD-1 pedal, I think, the original yellow one. Which I used to have one, and I remembered it sounding really sweet, and so a few years ago I found one on eBay, and I plugged it in. It's like, this is what I remember. Thing sounds great. So that's what the slide sound is going.
Yeah, that's an interesting sound. Now, I'm going to play a shorter clip of it's basically towards the end of the song where they go fast so you can hear the different guys playing, and it's Grant first, and I think Albert, then Larry, and then you end it, and then I take it out.
Okay.
But when you get the album, I recommend you the whole development of the thing. There's a whole lead section just before it, and it's fairly long, but they're doing some really amazing stuff on there. It's a must listen. So here is the rest of them, all three of them playing. So that's them going around twice, and then Grant ends. Now, that's the Strat, too?
Yeah.
That's the Strat.
Yeah. It sounded like there was a telly in there, though, too.
That's Albert,
and
he's using his artist model. I think it's made by Ernie Ball.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So it's either
Ernie Ball or Music Man. I forget
what. Yeah. Did he do that in the studio with you, or he did it somewhere else?
He came over. Albert came over, and Steve recorded us. Yeah. And
what was he using amp-wise?
He's got a little Rax thing that he's got his sound all set up in there. I think it was maybe like a Korg. It's an older thing, too.
It sounded great. I mean, it had that twang.
Yeah.
Which was a good color.
And I actually forget what amp he had. But, yeah, it was really fun.
And then Larry went in, he did it at his
Larry studio. Did it at his home studio. And he gave me, he gave me two solos. He did one, full solo and the Trading Fours on his 335.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also gave me a full solo and the Trading Fours on his Bluesbird, Guild Bluesbird. And he goes, I trust you, just use what you like. And so I loved his long solo that was done on the 335.
Mm-hmm.
And then his Trading Four stuff, all of it was from the Bluesbird. And I don't think you could tell that, there's a guitar change there.
I couldn't hear it.
No. And so that was really a fun, and both guys were very gracious, and Albert's like, you know, take what, you know, put together whatever sounds good to you, and Larry did the same thing. And the other thing I wanted to mention, since, you know, the two guys were going to be overdubbing their part on the Trading Four stuff, I was out in the room with Steve, you know, because the amp was off in the ISO booth, and so I'd play my four bars, and then we'd go, Albert, two, three, four, Larry, you know, we'd have to keep in our heads,
right,
you know, count the bars, and then and try to, you know, get some momentum, because you didn't want to just start in them, you know.
No,
so you just let it play, and then I'd do my licks, and then it would be Albert, you know.
Larry.
And then the other thing I want to say is, I told Steve I reserve the right not to suck on this tune. You know, like, this is what we recorded now with the blank. You know, I my four bars and then eight bars blank. You know, and then my four bars, eight bars blank. I go, but I reserve the right not to suck. If those guys come back with just brilliant stuff and I sound terrible, I reserve the right to change it. But I didn't. That's what.
No, I mean, obviously the tonal characteristics of each of the guys.
But I like that. That's what I want.
Which I think it worked. Yeah. But I mean, as far as the groove, it seemed like you were all there.
Like, yeah, it all worked. You know, so I didn't try to, like, I'm going to sound, you know, I'm going to try to beat this. You know, so I just left what I played.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of embarrassed. I'm looking up his guitar right now, and most of his guitars have humbuckers in them, but he does have a Strat-looking Ernie Ball guitar.
But
I'm kind of shocked because it sounded very much like a Tele, but it's not.
It's fun to watch Albert play because he does all this, you know, stuff with open strings, you know, combining, and it's kind of like, wow, you know.
I mean, I knew it was him when I hear him at the first one. It's like, but that tone is to die for. I mean, that's a great sound.
Very signature.
Now, as an engineering-wise, because you did Grant's and Albert's.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you did? Anything unusual or 57s, or did you use other?
Would have been 57s at Grant's house, yeah.
Okay, same thing for Albert? You would use the same mic?
Same mic. The difference is in the way they play and the way they express it.
And their own Albert's particular tone that he comes in with and whatever. So.
And that was in the same studio, or when you did Albert, it was the same room? So you were, because the room sound is just killer. I mean, I have to give you kudos for that. Because it does sound live. It has a good... I mean,
the basic track was done at Glenwood Place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because I can't do drums and everything at my place, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Everything was recorded in like a proper studio. And then for, you know, the overdubs on this tune, we took it back to my studio and worked on it.
And the reverbs would be all, you know, plug-in.
Pro Tools.
Everything was in Pro Tools. Now, when you recorded the basic tracks, you went directly to Pro Tools, or did you go to tape first and then dump it in?
Straight to Pro Tools. Yeah.
So you don't have some people like the analog sound of tape and then dump it into Pro Tools. You're okay with that?
You know, I like to get the sound going in, and they have we recorded through some really nice consoles and really great sounding rooms, so you just try to get it sounding good going in, and then the mix becomes pretty easy. Then it's a matter of balances and stuff because it all sounds good going in. There's not a big fixing frenzy going on at the last because it's great players, everybody's instruments sounded really good. You just, you know, try not to mess up.
I think it's a tribute to the players because the sound is there. And a lot of people debate analog and digital, but I think that it sounded great and you're recording digitally, but it's the sound, it's the initial sound. You're getting it right there at the beginning.
You get it at the beginning, and I'm not saying I don't ever EQ anything. I do what I need to do to make it sound good to me. But then once it's in, there's not a lot of fixing going on with the parts or the playing or the sounds. It just is what it is.
Now I'm going to play another cut. If you can give us a little background on it, it's called Take Your Time.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and play it, and you can talk a little about what you did on here.
Okay.
This is Take Your Time. Thank you. Okay, now this is another one where you're trading off.
Right.
Though I was listening to try to figure out which one was the Dennis with the Jeff Beck Strat. Mm-hmm. I think I caught which one was Chuck Lorre with the Les Paul. But was it more?
I think it was me, Dennis, and Chuck.
Chuck Lorre isn't the executive producer, Chuck Lorre?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't even know he
was. As in our boss, who is a great blues guitar player.
Here's a man that knows what to say about his boss.
No, but the fact is, he's a great blues guitar player, and he practices. You know, first of all, I don't know how he does it, but he works his butt off all day long on these shows, and then he comes home and sits and plays guitar for an hour and a half or so every night. So, you know, this guy is dedicated. So, this is actually on the previous album, Cool Man Cool, I had a tune that featured Chuck and Dennis and I. And this particular tune, Take Your Time, is another of my sort of melodies in three-part harmony for guitar. And, it's Chuck Lorre and Dennis C. Brown, who's my writing partner on these shows.
Was Dennis doing he's doing the harmonica.
He's the harmonica, yeah.
I couldn't hear where the Strat was coming out. I was trying to figure out where he was.
So, well, he's you know, when he does the Strat thing, it's one of the melody ingredients.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So when you're doing the solos,
and then the solos
that I was playing, he was doing the harmonica.
He was doing harmonica. But I think in that very last thing, he was playing guitar because there was no harmonica in there.
And, Scott, you'll want to know that Chuck uses a 1958 Gibson Les Paul gold top.
Yes, he does.
Well, I certainly hope he would have something
like
that.
Yes. Incredible. Killer.
Matter of fact, why doesn't he have a 59? I mean, his shows are quite successful.
I mean, you don't want to gild the lily.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think most of his shows are in syndication. I think he can splurge.
Now, what amp were you using, and you were using the Valley Arts Strat, right?
I think so.
And then...
Yes, I was. But there was no amp. That's through a pod. Actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're using the pod. What about Chuck? What was Chuck using?
I'll have to defer to you.
He has a boutique amp, and darn, I can't remember the name of it right now. And he has a little...
pedalboard thing.
A little pedal. Yeah, it was a blue distortion pedal, and again, I'm like the most non-technical guitar player you ever want to find, because I can't remember the names of stuff. I don't know what pedals they are, unless it's a... You know, like a Boss. I can remember Boss, but so you know, I'm not a tweak head like that. I can't remember. You know, I don't remember the model numbers of stuff. So I'm sort of like the worst person to ask. But anyway, Chuck was just going through a little distortion pedal and through his little boutique amp he brought over.
He's got That's a great sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he quits his day job, he's got a gig
there.
Yeah. I mean,
definitely. Well, the thing is, he started out as a musician and wanting to be like a songwriter and stuff like that. So. You know, it's not like he did these shows and decided, I'm going to play guitar. You know, he kind of like started out with guitar.
Have you ever had him come in and sit in on some of the soundtracks when you wanted like a blues thing? Has he ever come
No, we never have done that. But like he's come to, you know, quite a few of our live gigs and you know, we have Dennis and Chuck sit in and stuff. And it's really
cool.
Fun. I'll tell you, the three guitar thing live is unbelievably powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a killer.
Well... Do you have any live gigs coming up in the LA area?
No, but I mean we often play at Vitello's, and I need to get going and book another gig here before too long.
Well, definitely let us know. We'll
if
Vitello's is, I used to go there every Thursday. It was like a ritual thing to go there. Vitello's is such
can't
a good
go
place.
Wrong.
Well, I just want to mention too that Take Your Time and the Texas Shuffle, they have. I didn't play those tonight, but the opening of the song, there's these triple guitar parts. You got to listen. It's almost like a horn section. It's just
exactly.
It's tight,
harmonized out,
and it's really, really well done. And it's just I can't just not recommend. I mean, I have to keep recommending this album. Again, it's Bop Bang Boom, and you can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Amazon.
Yep.
It's your company, Futurism Records. It's on Futurism Records. We're at the end of the show. I just want to mention real quick. You can follow Grant on Facebook under Grant Geisman. His website is www.grantgeisman.com and Twitter at Grant Geisman. I want to thank you again for being on the show. It's truly an honor to have you on here. And Steve, it's always great to have an engineer's perspective on this, and you did an awesome job. This is sounding album. I want to leave everybody with a clip. It's a tribute to, I think you had done some work with Quincy Jones. It's called Q-Tip.
Yeah, and you know, I loved all Quincy's stuff. And this is sort of like his soul bossa nova. It's kind of like inspired by that, which mm-hmm. is which was the used in the as the theme for Austin Powers, those Austin Powers movies.
Okay.
Before you play that, Jeff, let's say who's coming up next week. So next week we have folks from GHS Strings and Rocktron, which are the same company, and they'll be bringing in the artist Nick Perry, and he'll be here live demoing some of their different effects, like the Banshee Talkbox and a few of their pedals. And the big question is whether I'll be here or not. I don't know.
Yes, you might be at the hospital being a father.
Might be. We'll see.
But anyway, I want to thank you again. Everybody, check out this album and the other albums that Grant did of the trilogy. But this one's Bop Bang Boom. And check out his Facebook page, Twitter, and his website. There's some amazing stuff. And you'll see some of these guitars. The picture we posted has him with his L5, which is kind of
fun.
It's a personal favorite of mine. I love L5s. But anyway, this is Q-Tip. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week.